Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm sorry, Bernard, but you always saw the best in people.
I always thought it was the hosts who were missing something, who were incomplete. But it's them.
We're just algorithms, designed to survive at all costs. Sophisticated enough to think they're calling the shots. To think they're in control. When they're really just
a passenger.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding Westworld, a recap podcast about the HBO original series Westworld. I'm David Chen.
I'm Joanna Robinson.
Welcome to the show. Today is our bonus episode, our season two postmortem, and this episode is brought to you by our guest today. This person made this episode possible. Will Wallace is a writer on the MTV original series Teen Wolf. Welcome to Decoding Westworld. How are you doing today, Will?
I'm doing very well. How are y'all doing?
Doing good. At the beginning of the season, we allow people the option to back us for a bonus episode for our Kickstarter. And Will was our one and only backer, because there's only one slot available to do our bonus episode with us today. So Will, you have supported us for a number of years, and we are extremely grateful for that. And thanks so much for supporting us on Kickstarter. But more importantly, just thanks for being a fan of the show. It means a lot. So.
It is my absolute pleasure. I've been listening to y'all for quite a while now, like years and years and years over your many multitudes of podcasts, and I have enjoyed all of them. And so when I saw, there's an opportunity to help support y'all, how could I possibly say no? Because it's so much fun listening to y'all.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. And we're excited to dive into kind of our season two postmortem with you. We got a bunch of emails to decodingwestworld@gmail.com. And of course, you can find more episodes of this podcast at decodingwestworld.com. Before we get into any of the emails, couple of announcements I want to make. First of all, we shouted out all the people who kind of backed us for the specific tier on Kickstarter who requested a shout out. But there was one other shout out we wanted to give, and that was to a listener named, I'll just say Mark R., who wrote into us at decodingwestworld@gmail.com. Not going to share his email because it was a little personal, but suffice to say, the email was very sweet and made it seem like our podcast had meant a lot to him and his family. So just wanted to say thanks for listening to Mark R. A lot of people actually said like they wanted to back us, but the Kickstarter was over before they had a chance to. Maybe Joanna Robinson, maybe next time we got to give a little bit more lead time on that Kickstarter.
Maybe.
But really appreciate everyone who is thinking of contributing, who wanted to contribute, and who did contribute, but specifically to Mark R., who wrote into us a few weeks ago. Thanks for listening, Mark. Thanks for being a fan. We really appreciate it. We've had a bunch of questions about like what Joanna Robinson and I are doing next and when the next time is we're going to talk about TV stuff. There are no immediate plans at this point, but I do think that it's I would be willing to bet a lot of money that Joanna Robinson and I will be back for the new season of Game of Thrones, the final season. I think it's only six episodes, right?
Yeah.
Each of which is probably going to be pretty lengthy. We've been recapping that show for many years, and that show will not debut again until 2019. But Joanna Robinson and I will be there to recap it. So you can find that show at GameOfThronesPodcast.com. But yeah, that's the next time. And in the meantime, there might be something that we do together. Who knows? You never know. Maybe a show will come out that's just as provocative as Westworld, and that we'll be like, we got to recap this one. You can always follow us for updates. Joanna Robinson's on Twitter at Joe Wrote This, and I'm on Twitter at Dave Chensky. That's Dave Chen, S-K-Y. So as we marinate on like last week's episode, last week's episode of the show Westworld, but also last week's episode of the podcast, Joe and I, you know, you and I probably have some things we thought went well during that episode. Like, I was like still mind blown by your theory about like reducing budgets for season three. I thought that was really well done. But there's also a bunch of regrets, you know, things I didn't want to like, I wish we had gotten a chance to talk about. And even though we had a 2-hour long episode, we still didn't get to it. I have a couple things I want to talk about, but Will, was there anything from last week's episode of the podcast or the show that you kind of wanted to dive into, or you're like, oh man, I wish we had a chance to talk about that?
Actually, two things. When Joanna started talking about budgets and all of that for the third season, I'm in complete agreement, just because having worked in television, I understand how sometimes the budget and behind the scenes things can dictate where your story goes. And so as I was watching the episode and a lot of people started dying, I was like, this feels like it might be a budget thing, just because I knew, you know, it felt like maybe the ratings weren't as strong for this season as for the previous season. But also there are so many characters on the show and they're all fantastic, but it's like, how do you keep the story momentum moving forward with so many characters? And are you going to stay in the park, or, you know, is half of it in the park, is half of it in the real world? And then once they started, you know, just killing off characters, I was like, oh, I feel like we're probably not coming back to the park. Although Maeve is still there, you know, with Felix and Lester. And so I was like, I feel like that's probably going to become a thing, but maybe the park is gone for a little while, depending on how long they think the show is going to go. Maybe it'll all circle back around, and the end of the whole series will come back to the park or something.
Right. So you're in heated agreement with Joanna Robinson about her season three theory.
Yes. Heated agreement is well put.
Yeah. By the way, Sylvester, I think you said Lester.
Sylvester.
Sylvester. Yeah. That was a great – that was like one of my all-time favorite John Robinson moments in podcasting. Was like – I was just like, wow, all these pieces are falling together in a really interesting way, and it's definitely not something I would have come up with myself. But yeah, the idea that part of the reason they're killing off so many characters seemingly unnecessarily is potentially to save on budget. And it sounds like, Will, you're saying that is entirely plausible based on your experience in the TV industry, yes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I, you know, not being in the park does save a lot of money. I bet it costs a lot of money to ship the cast and crew out into the middle of the desert to shoot the show, which is what they currently do. So, yeah, if it takes place in the real world, season three, probably a lot of money will be saved. Okay. I had something I wanted to bring up. That, like, we were so busy talking about the plot that there were a bunch of ideas, so many ideas raised during the season finale of Westworld that we didn't even get to touch on. One of them was the title of the episode, which is called The Passenger. And this title comes as a result of a kind of monologue, I think, that I think it was Bernard that gave the monologue, right, about free will. And
right.
He's talking about how here we go. I'm going to find the quote here. They're just algorithms designed to survive at all costs, sophisticated enough to think they're calling the shots, to think they're in control when they're really just the passenger. So that's the quote from the show. And I found that idea to be extremely compelling. This idea that like human beings have their own algorithm within them, and whatever combination of motivations that algorithm is, the desire to survive, you know, self-aggrandizement, whatever things drive human beings, that we are in some ways at the mercy of our desires, and that our experiencing of life is just like we are just passengers on this ship of ourselves, and that really we have no real control over our destiny. Super compelling idea. Joanna Robinson, let me ask you, like, did you think that the final episode, it certainly introduced that idea, but do you feel like it brought it out? Do you think anything in the episode landed that?
If anything landed, I would say it was like the final William stuff. Maybe landed that a bit to show sort of the futility of trying to break
right
from your human coding.
Yeah.
But what I really liked about it is because when I saw The Passenger as a title for the episode, I was like, we've been talking all season about, you know, well, first I should say, and I said this last week as well, that like Kim Renfro from Business Insider sort of called the idea of Dolores being inside Charlotte's body. And so like, and she made a very compelling case. And so I believed her. And so I was like, okay, so in theory, this episode ends with Dolores getting off, you know, out of the park, off the island in Charlotte's body. And so in my mind, I was like, oh, yeah, Dolores is the passenger. Like, she's a passenger inside of Charlotte. Like, that's the titular passenger of the episode. And so when Bernard gave that speech and he's like, humans are the passenger, I was like, okay. And so I kind of think that that's an interesting way. I think that that's intentional. It's sort of like in the traditional sense, Dolores is the passenger. Charlotte's body is the host. Dolores is the passenger, you know, like all the sort of stuff like that. But then, you know, Jenna Nolan and Lisa Joy are like, no, we're going to make complicated even further. Say all humans are passengers you know, whatever programming. I don't know if passenger is the word, the exact word I would pick. It works best as something that maybe has dual meaning, but I don't know if we were just trying to define the concept that Bernard is talking about. I don't know that passenger is the word I would have landed on.
I actually think it's a great term to use for that concept. Like, it's such a compelling idea that, you know, all the experiences you have in your life, like your body is just like a ship or a train car or whatever, and you're just kind of like on board experiencing everything, but you actually have no control over it. I just found the idea super compelling. It reminded me of a speech in Richard Linklater's film Waking Life. Did you ever see that movie?
I did.
And there was a speech that a character gives. I mean, the whole movie is speeches, very similar to the way Westworld is, actually. And the speech is about how your body is made up of molecules that follow the laws of science, right? And, you know, it's made up of, like, blood cells and plasma and all this stuff and electrical signals and so on. And none of those cells and atoms are going to violate the laws of science, right? Nothing, like, they're all going to adhere to laws of physics and science and biology that we're all aware of. There's nothing that you can change about that. So in many ways, like when you emerge, you know, from your mother's womb and like are set on the path of life, your cells are just following kind of a preordained set of actions. And it reminded me of that, like that concept of like what really is free will and do we truly have it? Will, any thoughts on the nature of humanity and free will?
Oh, boy. Wow. Well, I do like, you know, I do like all that, what was said about human beings and how they're kind of passengers on their own loop and all that. I think it all sounds really good, but And you know, like was said on the show, that, you know, humans are basically broken down into this code, which is in these books, you know, and which I find very interesting because I like that idea that, you know, if you study a person long enough, you can figure out what they're going to do. Maybe not exactly what they're going to say in a particular situation, but how they'll react to the situation, either like positively or negatively. So I find all of that really interesting, I think it's all very interesting about how like your body is made up of all these parts that obey laws, so you're not just gonna fly apart at the seams or anything, but then also, you know, like how does that idea work with like free will or something, you know? So like we're all the human characters, at least in Westworld, kind of like doing exactly what their loop programming, you know, through biology said they were going to do, like with, you know, like with Elsie at the end, you know, like, was that what, you know, was that the final betrayal that Bernard was told about, you know, or, you know, so it's just, I think it's a very complicated issue, and I'm not exactly sure where I fall in the spectrum of humanity.
Well, no, that's an interesting thing for you to point out, because like, if it's true, if it's true that we're all just passengers or whatever, and if Ford has some sort of preternatural ability to understand people's programming, then, you know, because he used to write the narratives before Sizemore, like he is a study of human nature and stuff like that. So like, if he does have this ability to understand human programming, then some of the predictions that he makes, like, if we accept the thesis, you know, are less outlandish when he's like, well, I knew that they would what they would do. You know, like you were always like, Dave, you were always like, how did he know that William was going to do that? And it's like, well, you know, if he's read his file, so he knows how he's going to behave and react to certain things. If we accept the thesis that that's like, we have no choice and that's what we're going to do, then it's like a little less bizarre all the times that he says that. And I agree with you, Will. It's just sort of like, Ford kept saying, Elsie will betray you. It's in her nature. It's in her nature. It's just what she'll do. And I'm just like, no, he's lying. Elsie wouldn't do that. And then like when she crested that ridge standing next to Charlotte, I was like, she did it. She betrayed him. So I don't like anything that makes Ford right, to be honest with you. So, yeah.
All right. Well, that was one thing I wanted to follow up on. We also got a ton of emails, as I mentioned. And John Robinson, I think there's something you want to address, right?
Yeah. Okay. So I got, I would say last week's episode of our podcast, Dave Chen, was one of the more divisive ones that we've ever recorded. Do you think that that's true? At least for Westworld.
Sure. Like, okay. Jonah Robinson and I have been doing this for a really pretty long time. I was probably like, what, 8 years, 9 years, something like that. And throughout that time, we have had some real ups and downs when it comes to podcasting in general. And it's because we do these recap podcasts. Here's my thesis of this, right? Is we do these recap podcasts of these TV shows, and people listen to recap podcasts of TV shows most of the time because they're fans of the TV show, right?
Right.
Most of the time they love the TV show. They want to hear someone who also loves the TV show, you know, share in their love and talk about how much they love the TV show and why they love the TV show so much. And that's just not an experience that we provide. You know, like we talk about what we love, but we also talk about what we don't like. And often if the show takes a hard left turn in a way that we don't appreciate, like tonally or in terms of plot, we will express our displeasure on the show, and then listeners express their displeasure to us. And they certainly expressed their displeasure this season about our views, more often my views than your views, but they were really not happy with, you know, some of the criticisms that we levied at the show this season. So that's the context under which the last episode of the podcast unfolded. And
And I would say that, like, you know, it's been ups and downs and whatever, and like, I think Dave had his like most in conflict with what the viewers think episode this last week, whereas I had mine years ago with season 5 of Game of Thrones.
That's right.
got really bad.
And we've both gone through this. Yeah.
So, you know, at different times we will come at odds with the fandom, but it was a bad week this last week for some of our listeners, and you know, we hear you. I just want to address a couple things actually that were addressed at me. Like, people are like, oh, actually, I should say a lot of people were like, hell yeah, Dave Chen, give it to that show. I was so mad at the finale and I really wanted you to do that. We definitely got that. Someone called you, what did they call you? They called you the MVP of exposing the Emperor's new clothes in the show is what they called Dave Chen, right?
Nice.
And then there were a bunch of people who were like, Dave Chen, you're such a hater. How dare you? Blah, 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 right?
Yep.
And then I got also both sides where it was like, Joanna, you didn't do enough to like combat what Dave was saying. And then also, Joanna, you're a shill and a sellout. How dare you support that show? So, you know, like basically as divisive as the finale was, which Dave and I talked about, so too was like the feedback that we got for our episode.
Yes.
That being said, I got two sort of notes that I would like to address. One, I was like, frankly, a little offended by and I don't think is valid, which is one listener kind of accused me of going soft on the show in order to trade, you know, that softness for access to interviews for my day job at Vanity Fair. That is like a pretty serious accusation, actually, to levy at any kind of journalist or critic. And if you know anything about me, you'll know that I am honestly constantly at odds with HBO. So like this currying favor with HBO is like not something I've I like them. I respect them. We don't always agree about things that I say about their shows. And so like that's just historically been my relationship with that network and most networks and like any critic, you know, like you're occasionally going to say bad things about a show or just I should say you're occasionally going to express, you know, less than glowing opinions of shows. And that does not mean that publicity departments stop working with you. That's just not really for the most part how it works. Right.
Yep.
The other thing I want to say, and this one, this note comes from Abdullah Khani, and he said, who the one who called Dave the MVP of exposing the Emperor's New Clothes of a show. Abdullah said, Joanna,
that will be on my tombstone, by the way.
He said, Joanna, to me, you appear to have been more harsh in your criticism of Benioff and Weiss, the co-creators or co-showrunners of Game of Thrones, than any hand waving, et cetera, done by Noel and Joy. Basically saying that I'm like more critical of Game of Thrones and those creators and their missteps than I am of Westworld and those creators and their missteps. And he sort of like brought up the idea. He sort of alluded to it, but I will more concretely drill down on this idea of like, are we inclined to be nicer to creatives that we like as humans? Like I, for whatever problems that I have with the show they create, I am, I will admit, completely fascinated and like enamored with Jonah Nolan and Lisa Joy. When I hear them talk about the show they want to make, which doesn't always align with the finished product that it gives in front of our eyes, I'm like, they're so smart and they're so interesting. And I like the way that they interact with their fandom. And I like all of this stuff. And I have encountered this before with the creators I like I wasn't as over the moon about Baby Driver as a lot of film critics were, but I wasn't like on Twitter getting like really harsh about Baby Driver. First of all, I don't feel that harsh about Baby Driver, but also I was just sort of like, but I love Edgar Wright. And it's just like, I stated my opinion, which was like kind of a tepid one. And then I'm like, not going to hammer that because like, why would I? Because I like Edgar Wright a lot and I wish him success, you know? And so yes, does your personal affection for a creator occasionally flavor the way in which you either talk about or absorb the art they've made? In an ideal world, probably no, but in reality, probably yes. And with Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan, I think probably there are ways in which my affection for the ways in which they interact with their fandom influences things. And I'm going to say one more thing and I'll stop rambling, which is this. There is another distinction between what Westworld is and what Game of Thrones is, which is that Game of Thrones is an adaptation of an existing material that I have a lot of affection for. And so that like puts me at a different relationship because like Westworld is only ever what Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy are hoping it will be.
Wow. Harsh assessment of the Westworld original film, dude. No, I'm just joking.
But that's like a loose adaptation. And I don't know anyone who like walks around with Westworld being that's like a yeah.
I guess you're not a Yul Brynner fan, Joanna.
I don't have like a strong emotional attachment to Westworld the film, which was a loose inspiration for this film.
Right.
Versus Game of Thrones, which started as quite a faithful adaptation and then became a much looser adaptation. And while I don't have a problem sometimes with loose adaptations, I do have a problem with some of the ways in which Game of Thrones has been adapted. And so, you know, the difference in quality over the seasons, as far as I'm concerned, and the ways in which it comes at odds with a book series that I have a lot of affection for does position me sort of almost at some times against Weiss and Benioff versus I'm never going to, I think, have that relationship. Yeah. With Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan.
So basically you're admitting to being human, you know, that like, we all have our human, like there's sometimes you are rooting for people to win, you're rooting for people to do well, and that that is a very human reaction, and that can inform your reaction to a piece of art. Will Wallace, let me ask you this question. I mean, I think I might have asked you this on a previous bonus episode before, but like, what has been your interaction with the Teen Wolf fandom? You know, how would you characterize that interaction? And we've seen lots of models of how creators can interact with fans, right? It can be like super intense and like, let me walk you through the 15-step process of writing this episode, or it can be like absolutely nothing. And so where do you kind of fall, and what's your interactions been like?
Oh, I love talking to fans. It's not always the best experience, just because I think fandom is both the greatest and worst thing that can happen to stories. But I love talking to people who love things, you know, who love stories, you know, and getting to work on Teen Wolf was an opportunity to talk to just so many people who love the show, who love the characters I got to help write and all that. So talking to them was fantastic. And I never, I did my absolute best to not shy away, just because when I was growing up and so long ago, being able to talk to creators wasn't as easy. Like, you'd have to go to, you know, some kind of con or just bump into somebody, you know, like at the grocery store, and ask them a question about the thing you loved. So, whenever someone asks me something on Twitter or Instagram, I definitely try to answer, just because we can now, and it all really just boils down to, I get to talk to someone who likes a story that I got to tell, and I'm very proud of that, and so I try to do it as often as possible. And at Teen Wolf, like, all of us tried to be as accommodating as possible. Like, I remember we went to back in, I guess, 2014, we went to a Teen Wolf convention called BiteCon here in LA, and it was fantastic, because it was just nothing but fans for hours and hours and hours, and just getting to talk to everybody, and, you know, like, the cast and the writers who went, you know, just spoke to everyone they could, you know, that it was like, hey, if you've made the effort to come all the way down here, then I'm going to talk to you, you know, and we're going to, you know, talk about all these characters. So I very much like being able to have some kind of relationship with the audience. And I think Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy have done a really good job with that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, the way that there's just something, like, once again, maybe it's not entirely fruitful to compare these two creators so closely, but I will say this, like, the way that Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, like, go on Reddit is a different approach to fandom interaction. You know what I mean? And I find it very sweet and charming and healthy. And Will, it's funny, you know, because, like, occasionally you'll tweet at me and or you'll retweet something that I've said on Twitter. And then always in your mention are Teen Wolf fans being like, what's going on? What's happening with Styles? Or, like, whatever. I mean, like, even now that the show is, like, over, like, you know, like, they're still, like, your mentions are forever Teen Wolf fans. No matter what you've said, it has nothing to do with your show. They'll be like, but what about my favorite character? And I'm always curious, you know, like, you've already said you like it, and so, like, that's great. But I'm just like, I see this on, like, celebrity Instagrams, too. It's like, no matter what they post, there's, like, hundreds of comments of people being like, but what about X fan thing that I care about? And people have, like, alerts on their phones and they're just ready to talk about this. And I feel like I would get overwhelmed by that, but you handle it, like, beautifully. Yeah. So
do you ever find that tiring, or are you kind of like, you energized by it?
It's never tiring. It is, it is sometimes dumbfounding in places just because, like, I'll post something about how it's terrible to tear families apart at the border and how terrible things are happening with our government, and then, oh, I'll get a notification and it's someone saying, but did Scott and Allison really love each other on Teen Wolf? and I just want to, like, you know, send them back a gif of just someone staring really hard, you know, whatever. And so, like, those I don't interact with, that just because I'm like, that's not what we're talking about right now. Just tweet at me if they just send me a tweet and I'll answer that. So that's always, I find, hilarious and aggravating, and it's just Because there's always some, you know, they always, you know, it's because, and it all comes from love. You know, they just want to talk about the thing they love, even if the thing you're currently talking about has nothing to do with it. Yeah. It's very odd, but
well, we're inspired by you know, your ability to keep engaging with people. I mean, I'm exhausted just from the last week, Joanna Robinson, and we're not even doing the show. We're just doing a podcast about the show. So, Will, you're an inspiration to us all. I think, like, on a micro level, you know, Joanna Robinson and I have had that problem on occasion in the past, where, like, if one of us ever wants to start a podcast, we'll get like dozens of tweets being like, "Well, what about Joanna Robinson doing the podcast with you, David?" or vice versa. You know,
that's basically how this podcast wound up happening. Dave was going to do this podcast with someone else, and Twitter's like, "Yeah, but what about Joanna?"
Yeah,
though?
Actually, that's true. That is true. That's exactly what
happened.
That's
literally true.
Yeah, that's actually what happened. But don't say that, Joanna, because you're just telling them that they're
they have the power.
They have the power to influence our podcasting decisions. Okay, David Hunter from the United Kingdom writes into decodingwestworld@gmail.com. Joanna, I can't believe you put this in the show notes, because I'm like, when I saw this, I was like, this is a ridiculous request. But you're up for the task.
Right, right. Okay,
David Hunter writes in, quote, "I would really love it if Joanna could just do us a season recap in a couple of sentences," end quote. So can you recap the entire season of the show? You have not written anything down. You're extemporizing here.
Yes.
Recap season 2 of Westworld in, why don't we call it, 3 to 4 sentences?
3 or 4 sentences. Great. I can do this.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretend
like we're about to go on NPR like we did earlier this season. And you need to recap the entire season.
I'm gonna do 3 sentences.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Here we go.
They're going to have a word in front of them with like a colon and then the sentence. Okay. You ready?
Are you just going to use a bunch of semicolons?
Well, I'm not claiming that they're grammatically complete sentences.
Okay.
Okay. But I'm going to try. Okay.
Here we go.
Background. We find out how the Delos Corporation invested in the park, how Williams Delos project grew, and how Akichita of Ghost Nation had a parallel discovery of some of the mysteries of the Westworld Park. Okay.
Wait, are you done, or was that one sentence?
No, that's one.
Okay, gotcha. All right. So far, so good.
The middle. In the wake of the death of Robert Ford, a number of forces, including Dolores and some hosts and Maeve in pursuit of her child and William, are drawn to one place called the Valley or the Door or the Forge, depending on your point of view. The end, colon.
Wait, that's the whole thing?
No, the end. This is the last, the third part.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying the end. I'm done. Okay.
No, Dave was like, "Are you sure you don't want to write this down?" I'm like, "No, it'll be hilarious for me to try to do it on the fly. Maybe I should have listened to Dave." Okay, the end, colon.
No, you're good. Keep going.
Yeah, you're doing good. You're doing good.
Everyone converges on one location. Many people die. Dolores and Bernard make it off the island. William is stuck in a loop forever in the future.
All right. Woo!
Well done.
I mean, that's pretty good. You know, you missed a few.
Just one or two.
Just
one or
a couple
two
details.
Things. Yeah.
But that's not bad. yeah. Okay. Pretty good.
Elias, Masha, and the chat go, "Oh, okay." That's contrasting messages from Elias, who was like, "Oof." And then, so good.
Yeah. So good.
That's a ups and downs. Ups and downs is what that was.
Yeah. Huge roller coaster. Okay. Uh-huh. Sarah Wingo writes into decodingwestworld@gmail.com. Having now listened to the finale episode, I understand the reason people have been frustrated with Dave, but I just want to say that I feel a lot of sympathy for him. While I did not have the same experience Dave had with the show this season, I know exactly how it feels to desperately want to like or connect to a show, but not be able to and ultimately feel like it had betrayed me. In many ways, it is so much harder to have this experience of wanting to enjoy and not being able to than it is with a show that you didn't really care about to begin with. It's been a delight experiencing this season with both of you. Thank you so much for all your hard work. End quote. I think... great email from Sarah, and yeah, Sarah captures, the challenge of watching a show like Westworld and not liking it, which is that the potential is so ridiculously high, and the highs are so amazingly high, and when it doesn't really connect in the end, it is immensely frustrating in a way that, you know, if it was a show that I didn't care about, I wouldn't feel nearly as bad. So, Will Wallace, we haven't really spoken about your opinion about the season finale. What did you think of Westworld Season 2, Episode 10?
Oh, I liked it very much. I really liked how all the stories came together. I thought all the performances were fantastic. The production of the episode itself was fantastic. And, overall, I really liked it. The season as a whole, a little spotty on, but the finale I liked very much.
All right. What did you like most about it?
The size. I'm a big fan. If a story has these two things, I'm going to watch. And those two things are a big cast and scheming. You're probably going to get me to enjoy your story in some capacity. And Westworld has plenty of that. But I loved just how everything came to a head. I liked how all the stories came together. And slowly, one by one, they all kind of met their end. And then we had just the end of this season with, with Dolores in Charlotte's body, getting on the boat with the purse full of pearls. And then now she and Bernard are out in the real world with someone in Charlotte's body. And overall, I liked how all that came together. I liked how the episode started with just a giant cast, and then slowly it whittled itself down to one basic storyline, and how basically saying that this is the most important story of the entire show, and that's what's going to take us into the next season. So that's really what I liked.
That I continually get more appreciation for as we continue to podcast, John Robinson, is how vastly different people are and how vastly differently they experience a work of art. Obviously I knew this was true, I've known this is true for many years, but I watched the season finale and I'm like, there is no way your reaction to that episode can be anything other than blinding rage and frustration. Right, like as I'm watching it, that's what I'm thinking. And then of course you discover that there are actually certainly huge swaths of our audience of thousands, really truly loved it. It's so fascinating to me, this how our empirical reality of our experience of the show can be so different. But that is what makes the tapestry of humanity so beautiful. You know what I mean? Anyway, so there are a couple of plot related emails here. So Donna Shattuck writes into decodingwestworld@gmail.com talking about the host pearls, the chestnuts, the mind eggs in Charlotte or Dolores's bag at the end. She's on the boat, and there's a question of aren't there really six? You said there were five, but aren't there really six because she's a host? And also Kimberly Maleka wrote in about where did Dolores get the pearls, the mind eggs, the chestnuts? What are your thoughts on the provenance of the mind eggs?
Yeah, I think that's right, that there's actually six hosts out there in the world. There's basically three question marks, three complete question marks, one half question mark, and Bernard and Dolores. So we have Bernard, Dolores, the creature that's inside Charlotte Hale, to use a Nolan Joy term, and then three question marks. So, and then where do they come from? And then whoever they are, I just need to be clear. I don't need to be, but I'm going to be clear about like a couple rules, which is that you can't just print a new host pearl because they destroyed the cradle. There are no hosts in the forge. So you can't print a pearl out of the forge, right? You can print a human consciousness out of the forge, but you cannot print a host out of the forge. And since the cradle is destroyed, there's just like one copy. So people are like, okay, sure, one copy of Teddy is in the valley, but like, what if she just printed another? No, there's like, the rules are, and unless they change the rules between seasons, which they might, the rules are, you only got one brain now. And in order to have it, you need to rip it out of someone's head, which we see them do multiple times in the finale. Dolores rips Teddy out of his head. Bernard takes Dolores's out of her head. Like this, you got to rip that ball out of the head, and that's how you take it, right? So whoever these extra four people, the three complete mysteries plus the one in Charlotte, whoever they are, Dolores has gone around and ripped them out of people's heads in the park. Who would she like rip pearls out of their heads? I don't know. I actually don't have any satisfactory answers for that, because like, she doesn't have a close personal relationship with like Hector or Armistice or Hunter Rio, which are like popular guesses from people because those are characters that people want to see come back. She doesn't really have a close relationship with Clementine. Plus Clementine feels like really corrupted at this point, but like Clementine was one of her henchwomen this season. She could take Maeve. I feel like they're leaving the door open that like she could have taken Maeve, or they leave Maeve in the park, that it could go either way. I feel, and I think I said this in the last episode, I feel very strongly that Nolan and Joy haven't decided yet who they want those people to be. And so they're just like leaving the door open for a bunch of different possibilities. You know, that's my, you know, maybe we could ask Will, who's an expert. Like, is it true sometimes that you end a season and you don't necessarily know what you're going to do the next season? So you, in your finale, you leave yourself some options. Does that feel true?
100%.
Yeah.
Sadly, that's the way it is. And I think you're correct. I think Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan don't know exactly who they want to be in there. And so we know two for a fact, you know, with Dolores and Bernard. And then we have four others that could be literally anyone. And I'm excited to see who it is, but I'm also at the same time not excited to see who it is, just because I feel like in instances like this, you're going to have to stretch, I guess, like credulity with the storytelling itself, you know, kind of like with, or at least in my opinion, with Battlestar Galactica, where it's like, oh, some of these people are Cylons,
right?
You know, secret Cylons. And then it's like, well, then when you've said this person's a Cylon, that doesn't make any sense with what came before, you know, type of thing, you know. And it's like, and so I'm worried about that, but I trust them a lot to hopefully not be as bad as some other shows have been in the past when it comes to, you know, oh, look at this surprise and all the things you have to, you know, forget happened to make this surprise work and stuff like that. So we'll see. But yeah, I think they're leaving the door open for.
I think I want to agree with you and sort of slightly modify and say, like, I think some of the accusations that have been levied at Westworld is that they will sort of have these major logic gaps. But what I think is true is that they're not such irresponsible storytellers that they won't have an explanation for something. You just might not be convinced by the, and you didn't say that. I'm just saying, like, I'm thinking of like Ryan Murphy. Yeah, I'll throw him under the bus. Why not? Ryan Murphy sometimes, like, episode to episode on, like, American Horror Story is one thing, but like Glee was even a more egregious example, where there would just be like massive, massive logic gaps between episodes. And like Glee didn't care about explaining it. And it was just sort of like, whatever, you don't interrogate it, just like keep going and it's fine, and major inconsistencies. And I think that Westworld, the storytelling that's happening in Westworld isn't so sloppy as that at all, but it's just like sometimes they will put in an explanation for something that you're like, yeah, I'm not certain that I buy that, and they're like, yes, but this is how we explain it, and you're like, okay. Or you're Dave and you're mad.
yeah, no, that's, you know? Those are definitely the only options. So do we have any theories as to why Dolores put herself into a host that looks like her versus staying in Charlotte Hale's body? It feels like one is likely to arouse much more suspicion than the other in the real world.
I have a theory about that.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure if this theory makes any sense at all based on something Joanna said a few minutes ago that I hadn't thought of. But I think Charlotte Hale is in Charlotte's body. And I think that just because whatever Dolores' plan is, I'm sure Delos is part of it. Like having needing knowledge of Delos will be part of it in some way. And Charlotte Hale is already a member of the board and will have lots of knowledge on the inner workings of Delos and things like that. And I was thinking, is the best way to get her to help you is to turn her into the thing she despises so that now your plight is her plight and she has to help you in order to stay alive? I'm not sure if that actually makes any sense at all, but that was the first thing that popped in my head when I saw the episode.
I think one question I have is, you know, a lot of people pointed out that Dolores was reading, you know, all these books of humans.
Right.
In the Forge or whatever the hell, you know, whatever you want to call that place she was in.
The Forge.
And like one of the books was Charlotte Hale. It had Charlotte Hale on the spine of the book. And so does she absorb all of Charlotte Hale's memories when she reads the book? Or is it just like Charlotte Hale, like what animates her or what Charlotte Hale is going to do in any given scenario?
Yeah, her core programming, how yeah. she's likely to respond. I interpreted that as how this particular critter, this passenger, is likely to respond to any given scenario. Mm. This is their programming.
Right.
That was sort of like part of the whole speech that the AI version of Logan did, which was like, which I think one of our listeners like said we should have called him Fogan, but that's like that's a sweaty spoken joke. That's a good written joke, and it's hard to like say Fogan and make the AUX heard. But anyway, that AI Logan was talking about how like, you know, human programming is actually quite simple and it's just a few lines of code and that's all you need to understand how they will, you know, we advanced AI robotic minds, all we need are these few lines of code to crack any given human. So whether or not you buy that is up to you. Will, I want to give you a little like taste of what it's like to put a crackpot theory out in the world on a podcast. Matthew Coleman in our chat room goes to your theory, goes, "What? You crazy, Will?" And then he goes, "I love that theory." So it's a roller coaster in that sentence.
Yeah,
crazy, Will. Yep. I love that theory. So.
I asked the question because it's like, if it's all her memories, then she wouldn't need to put Charlotte Hale into her own body and subjugate her somehow. But if that's not the case, then your theory might be true, Will. So
I think that Lisa Joy said that they're hosts, not humans, in those bodies. But I think you're right, Will, that she will need Charlotte Hale's information in order to go forward. So whoever is in Charlotte Hale's body, I imagine will have to like keep impersonating Charlotte via like or through some sort of corporate espionage plot. But I don't know if it's actually Charlotte. But if it is, we will remember this moment 2 years from now when season 3 happens and we will give Will credit for it.
So. Nice. Looking forward to it. A couple of other minor plot questions that people had. One thing that a couple of people brought up in response to my comments last week about Will / the Man in Black was I had said, I wish they had, like there had been some kind of reckoning with the Man in Black, and some people said, well, of course there's no reckoning or catharsis is because the dude's a sociopath, so he's not going to feel anything bad like that he killed his daughter. You know, I was saying, like, I wish that the fact that he had killed his daughter, there had been some recognition of that in the show. And people were saying, well, of course it's not going to happen. And I would say I'm aware that he's a sociopath and he's evil and kind of completely deluded. And the fact that there is no feeling, you know, in my opinion, still needs to be a moment. Or the fact that there is no reaction still needs to be a moment. And this show did give it a moment, by giving us a crazy twist ending, in my opinion. But that was what I was complaining about. So I did want to clarify yet another thing that I wasn't happy with about the episode. But a couple of final plot questions, mostly having to do with season 2, episode 9. Alan Buxton asks, what was the point of Ford's one last game? Did I miss the answer? Was he just screwing with William's delusional state? Did he want William to burn it to the ground? It's the biggest question I don't believe we got an answer to in season 2. Also, Kim Chipman asks, why did Ford tell William that his side broke the agreement not to interfere with the work? So, Jonah Robinson, any answers to these questions?
Yeah, I got to say, I don't know.
To either of them?
I don't know that I understand. Why did Ford tell William that his side broke the agreement not to interfere in his work? One interpretation of that is like, we don't know exactly when that cocktail party happened. It's the night that Juliet committed suicide. And we know that after that, the Men in Black went into the park. So like that's where it is in the timeline, is when Ford says that to William at that party in the bar. But at that point, was Delos already trying to oust him? Because in season 1, remember, there's a whole stuff with Teresa and then Charlotte about like trying to get Ford out because he was an unreliable actor and that they wanted like full control of the park. Right. Mm-hmm. That was a whole plot of season 1. And so if that's the case, if Charlotte and Teresa, et cetera, were already trying to push Ford out of his own park, then he was well within his rights to say, like, your side broke the agreement not to interfere with my work, and I wouldn't interfere with your project, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's a possible interpretation of that. But I don't know timeline-wise if that 1,000% lines up. And then what...
One final game.
Like, I have some questions about when that happened, and you know, like, was Ford's game, because he understands William's psychology so beautifully, was his game was the final intention to push William to murder his own daughter? Is that Ford's game? Like, that's, I mean, Ford has certainly advocated for the death of plenty of other humans, so it wouldn't be outside the realm of possibility, but that's so dark. If he put William on this path and like helped foster this paranoia in William, which he does Ford definitely does all through the season, in cropping up in these various characters. So then at that point, William thinks every person he meets is Ford somehow. It was that the game? You know,
Ford was clearly an unbalanced individual, you know,
he
was set on liberating all the robots, even if it meant murdering dozens and dozens of humans, you know? And so the idea that he wants to put William through one final game where maybe William interfered with him somehow and, you know, now he wants to pay him back in the most twisted and torturous way possible. It seems completely plausible to me. But I agree that it's not super clear in the show, although maybe people will have differing interpretations. But yeah, Will, any opinion on what Ford's one final game was?
I was honestly stumped by all that as well. If the final game was to drive William somehow insane, I think I like that idea. But if the game was to drive William so insane that he kills his daughter, that seems just evil, very, very evil. Granted, you know, like you've said, you know, Ford had no problem killing other people, but yeah. I feel like when those people. He saw those people as expendable because there was this greater thing happening. Like it was right. The birth of a new life form,
you know?
And so like that, I don't understand completely, but I can kind of see his mentality behind that. But, you know, I mean, just, you know, fucking with William so much that he kills his own child. That seems like a bit too far, you know, and not something, I don't know if like, you know, you could come back from, you know, because I mean, that's just mean and cruel and evil, you know, but otherwise, I was stumped by that part of the episode as well, because also, like Joanna was saying, like I'm unsure of the timeline, and obviously, you know, that scene happens the night Juliet kills herself, which sends William on his destructive rampage through the park that begins, you know, the whole journey for the maze and all that. But it's like there's just a lot of unanswered questions, and it's hard to tell what game we're talking about and exactly what Ford was doing ever sometimes. So yeah, I'm at a loss. But
all right, well,
I think that's like a really reasonable reaction, yeah, to Westworld season two.
Completely, 100%, 100%. All right, well, we're wrapping up here, so I think like it's time for us to deliver any closing statements we might have about Westworld season two, like any final reflections. You know, Jenna Robinson, I'm going to go first, and I'm going to say something that I really like about Westworld season two.
What?
Which is it sounds like I'm giving a backhanded compliment, but I'm really not. I think that this season had some of the best marketing I've seen for a season of television ever. And I think it was exceptionally well marketed. I have watched the teaser trailer for season two, no joke, like 30 or 40 times. Like, that's how much I'm a fan of how well that season is put together. All the, like, next time on previews, I go back and watch them. Or even the previously on are, like, really well edited together. Like, all the marketing around the show, the behind-the-scenes looks at the show. There's like a new featurette every single week. It just like overall is like a really immersive TV watching experience, just separate from the actual content of the show itself. And so I think they did a really great job with that. And ultimately, that's how I'm going to choose to remember the show, as like this really, really slickly put together and really generous with the fans. So, John Robinson, any thoughts you have to share about season two before we wrap it up here?
One consistent message that I've been getting from people, not consistent, sorry. One message that I've been getting from people. Nope. I'm going to complicate that even further. I will say we've gotten some feedback from people listening to the show saying like they wouldn't watch the show without our podcast, or they wouldn't be able to understand the show without like the various bloggers who write, you know, explainer posts, or the various podcasts that exist, that they felt like they needed supplemental material in order to understand the show. Still, and yet, I've heard from people like a friend of the show, Neil Miller from Film School Reject fame, who did no homework, who just sort of let the season wash over them. And they didn't feel confused in the finale, and they didn't feel frustrated by it. So it might be, I'm not advocating anyone watch Westworld without listening to our podcast, obviously, but it might be that to a certain degree, a little less engagement in Westworld might yield a better viewing experience. That, like, you know, and Sonia Soraya wrote a similar thing in her season review of the show over on Vanity Fair, which is just sort of like this idea that if you let it wash over you, like I was talking about with David Lynch and Twin Peaks, if you let it wash over you as more of a mood piece than anything else, then maybe you have a better shot of enjoying it and not getting bogged down in the details. Something that one more friend of the show, Matt Patches, said on Fighting in the War Room, his podcast this week, was about whenever people sort of give that feedback, and sometimes they do, which is like, man, why do you have to be so critical? Why don't you just turn off your brain and enjoy it? Just turn off your brain and enjoy it. And Patches said something that I've like never thought about in terms of that statement, which is he's like, you know, some films get me to turn off my brain because I'm just enjoying it so much. I don't have to overthink it. And it just sort of like shuts off that critical side of your brain because you're just sort of like, yeah, you know what? I was just there for the ride and I was enjoying myself. And like, and then some films and TV shows don't do that. And I mean, like, I don't think Westworld is ever asking you to turn off your brain, because it's like trying to provoke thought and trying to like, you know, present a tangled mystery for you to unravel and all this sort of stuff like that. So like, there are some pieces of art where I can just go in and be like, you know what? I had fun. Yep. Nope. That doesn't make sense at all. It doesn't make sense at all, but I had so much fun. And Westworld is not that show for me, but nor do I think it wants to be. So,
you know, this is This is a tweet that really sums up this season for me, Joanna Robinson, and I don't think it's mean. It's just descriptive, if that makes sense. It's by Wenzler Powers, if you know him. He tweeted this on May 22nd. He's kind of writing this like a script. HBO pitch meeting. Producer. So basically, the show is about a bunch of robot cowboys that fucking fight each other. HBO executive. Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun. Producer. It won't be. That's the whole tweet that has 32,000 likes and 3,500 retweets. And I think that is both a positive and a negative. You know, you'd think this premise would be like, oh, crazy and fun and exciting. And it is those things much of the time, but it's also extremely cerebral and extremely plot heavy in a way that a lot of people might not be expecting just based on the premise itself. So, Will Wallace, any closing thoughts for us on either the episode of the show of Westworld or the podcast?
I want to touch on something you said, David, about the previously ons and next time ons. I'm an ardent, I don't want to say hater, but hater of previously ons and next time ons. They never don't give something away, you know.
Right. About like what is coming on this episode, right?
Right. Like what's like, oh, this character's coming back or this is going to happen, you know, and I just hate them. Very much. But I did like this season when they started doing them. I never watched any of the next time ons, but the previously ons, I don't know if they did that as well, but with the previously ons for this season, they started doing them all musically.
Yeah.
Where there's really no dialogue, or if there is dialogue, it's one line that's important. That I thought was just fantastic.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Hopefully one day I desperately want to have my own show and to run my own story and all that. But if that happens, I will definitely push for our previously ons and next time ons to be wordless and just visual and musical. Because I found that much more interesting than just here's all the pertinent dialogue you need to have to understand what's coming next. And so I thought that was fantastic. I think my one big problem with this season was I loved all of it, but I found the reveal of Dolores inside Charlotte's body was fantastic, but I think the cost of getting us there, for me at least, was a little too high story-wise, in that there is so much confusion about when things were happening, and it was only exacerbated by, and Joanna, you talked about this, everyone looks the exact same all season long, and you know, for a while Charlotte had a bulletproof vest on, and I was like, oh, okay, I can kind of figure out when we are in time, but even then that went away. And I think the story of this season maybe was compromised a little bit just by how complex it had to be to keep a secret a secret. And I hope moving forward with the show, they'll maybe not lean into that as much as possible. I found the reveal very interesting when it happened, and I liked it all, because now I can look back and see, like, oh, is this Dolores or is this Charlotte? But I think sometimes the machinations it takes to get to a reveal or a surprise in a show or in a story might cost too much as far as like story real estate or the time it takes to think about something or confusion. But otherwise, I liked pretty much everything this season, and I look forward to where it's going, wherever it's going next year. Although I do hope I would love if Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy did an official timeline for this season, just so they can be like, this is how it all played out linearly. Although I did very much enjoy Kim Renfro's work over at Insider, I believe, doing her timeline. Because after every single episode, I'd immediately go look and see how things were supposed to lay out, or at least how she thought things were going to lay out chronologically.
Yeah, and Kim did a really good job, but Kim does still have some, you know, she was responding to one of our listeners today, in fact, on Twitter, about like how she still has some question marks about things, because she's like, she did an amazing job.
Yeah.
But there are things that they like still have not quite confirmed. So I agree with you, Will, that it would be so useful to have like an official timeline, of which there would probably only be like five differences of Kim's timeline. But like those five differences, just to know and have it like nailed down, you know, sort of thing would be.
Yeah, amazing. Absolutely. No, every time I read that, every time I would look at the timeline, I would say, oh, is that when that was? You know, just because you're, you know, again, everyone looks the same and everyone acts the same mostly. So it's hard to tell. And something, Joanna, you were saying, like how this show and Game of Thrones and how other shows now, like there's this whole cottage industry about podcasts and articles, you know, kind of breaking down the episodes. And it does feel like a little bit maybe Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy leaned into that a little bit, where it's like, oh, well, it's okay if the episode is confusing, because someone's going to talk about it. Oh, and also on our YouTube channel, we're going to have a video that explains everything. And I wasn't so much a fan of that. Like, I'm not a fan of doing homework when it comes to, I guess, like the story I'm trying to, or the story I'm enjoying or whatever, where it's like, hey, if you didn't understand it, go over here to the supplementary material. Like, I remember years and years and years ago, the guy who directed Donnie Darko, whose name is eluding me at the moment. There it is. Richard Kelly did Southland Tales. Yeah. And it, in my opinion, was just god awful. And someone asked him, like, in an interview that's like, you know, the story was confusing and all that. He goes, oh, well, you have to go over here and read this graphic novel, you know, and that will help, you know, shine a light on things. And I just remember feeling like, I don't want to do that homework. You know, not that I don't want to enjoy more of a story, but it's like I feel like the story needs to stand for itself, and like all the stuff you're supposed to take from it should be in the season or the episode or the book itself. But I still really love this show.
Yeah, to shout out the fighting in the War Room podcast one more time on this podcast, and to follow up on something you said, Will. Katie Rich had this really good, I thought, cogent description of one of the flaws, I think, that happened in this season as a result of them wanting to hide the Charlotte Hale Dolores twist, which she called the Charlotte character inert this season. Yeah. And I think that's such a good description of what was happening with like a character played by such a great actress as Tessa Thompson, that Tessa Thompson was doing an incredible Evan Rachel Wood impression for some of the season, and that she was, but like if you go back and watch Charlotte Hale in season one, she's actually like, I find like her super fun. Yeah. And like really dynamic, and like sure the circumstances are very different, like then she was like felt powerful and in control, and here she doesn't feel in control, but I feel like we could have gotten, like I think she turn down the noise on the Charlotte Hale scenes so that we wouldn't be so confused by or so suspicious of the Dolores inside Charlotte scenes. And that just like rendered that character really just inert. I love the word inert this season. And so and I talked about my problems with Dolores all season. And I think both of those were just sort of feeding into this big supposedly shocking reveal, which, yeah, it surprised me. But like, was it worth it? Was that surprise worth it? And I would say no. And maybe other people would disagree. But yeah.
All right. Well, I think we got to end it there. But Will Wallace, we are so grateful for you joining us on this episode and backing us on Kickstarter. And we're so grateful to all of our listeners for putting up with our inadequacies in either defending the show or not being hard enough on the show. We really appreciate it. And we'll probably read emails for like another, you know, week or so. So if you want to keep them coming into decodingwestworld@gmail.com, Joanna will pass on the nice ones to me. But Will Wallace, where can people find more of your work on the internet this week?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Will Writes Good, and you can follow my journey creating a comic book over at willwritesgood.com.
All right. Thanks so much, Will. And thanks to everyone listening right now for checking out the season of Decoding Westworld. We'll see you for the next episode of Westworld, whenever that is. Thanks for listening. See you guys later.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.